Well, hello there, everybody out there in Music Video Land, and welcome to another edition of Music Video Land Podcast, brought to you by your super good friends at IMVDB, the Internet Music Video Database. This is a podcast where we talk about music videos. My name is Adam. I totally nailed that intro, and with me is someone who's just nailing stuff all the time, Doug Klinger in Brooklyn, New York. Doug, how are you?
Doing super good. I am nailing stuff all the time.
Just nailing it.
It's fantastic.
100%. Never miss.
I don't know what that means. It sounds sexy, but I'm into it.
Yeah, just go with that. And then someone I actually don't know is nailing the status, but maybe we can find out. North of the Wall from Fringe Music Fix. As usual, it's Mr. Adam Alexander. How are you, Adam?
I'm great, and the nailing's a little low lately. Low count of nails.
We're gonna stop right there, and we're going to introduce our guests, because we are continuing a streak of having really awesome guests on this podcast, and we're super excited to have a director and writer, Mr. Ian Ponsjewel, who has directed music videos that you have definitely heard us talk about on this podcast, and actually just the last maybe 5 or 6 episodes, one of my personal favorites, Rollerblades by Quez. I think that's how you say his name. One that we talked about a few episodes ago that was one of our favorites, Make It Last by Pearls Negras, and a music video that's close to 500 million views, La 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 by Naughty Boy. And this week he released a video for someone who's pretty good at picking music video directors, Paolo Nutini, and the video was One Day. Welcome to the podcast, Ian.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on. It was a lovely intro.
Well, you have many other videos, just kind of cherry picking the ones that we've been talking about lately, because you've released quite a few in 2014. I think you're up to 6 or so.
There's also another one that you won't have seen because I sort of failed on that one.
So is that we won't see it because it didn't come out, or it didn't come out with your name on it?
Because it got no, it's just got totally canned.
Happens sometimes. We should talk about the One Day by Paolo Nutini video.
Sure.
Because that is one that did come out, and is a really fantastic video. And it's, you know, it's interesting because there's been a lot of talk about Paolo Nutini's video before this for Iron Sky, directed by Daniel Wolf.
Yeah.
Was such a like an epic scale video, and got a lot of people talking. So it must have been kind of, not intimidating, but interesting to follow that video and kind of the scale of it and the scope of it. And you followed it up with a video that's really, you know, beautiful and really cinematic, and stars Joanna Lumley, who people may not know her name, but definitely have seen her in different things. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about where this concept came for this video. Was this something that came from you or the band that you pitched to them?
Yeah, so it was actually written back in March. So that, I mean, it's been in my sort of, I've been sort of waiting for like literally half a year. So I got that track way back in March. And before Iron Sky came out, which I'll talk about in a bit, that which like blew my mind. I was in I had really skewed my whole day, the atmosphere of it, and I sort of woke up from quite an intense nightmare, and woke up and then sort of got my computer out and watched that video. That was the first, like, my friend is like, watch this, and I turned it on, and it just like fucking threw me for the whole, like, the whole day. I was in this like weird state from like the mixture of this nightmare that I'd had and this video, and I just shot the Odessa video the day before, so that night sleep was my like post shoot sleep, and I went through a kind of similar incredible video, but actually the One Day was written back in March, and the idea was as I always try to do, is quite a visceral subconscious sort of reaction to the music. I had no idea. I actually had no idea who Paolo Nutini was. And then started realizing, and so I listened to the track, and in my mind, there was this kind of 60-year-old black soul singer singing this tune. But I'd listened to it, and then I just, when I got it, I downloaded it to my phone immediately when I was sort of walking around London, and got the track, and then listened to it, and started seeing this kind of elegant, older kind of singer in a dressing room, sort of singing sadly in the mirror, singing that tune sadly in the mirror. But the era was like a very kind of timeless era that wasn't now, wasn't too far back. So that's the kind of atmosphere was very instant on the first listen. I kind of saw that image, this woman, and then it was after that that I'd listened over and over, and then the idea came of that she would turn young by the end by killing these girls. And I actually wrote it with, and then when I went into fully writing it, I wrote it with my very close friend Dobie Manilova, who has produced my work and does image research for me. She's a genius, and so we actually wrote the characters together after I'd gotten that kind of structural narrative arc. So like the aerial dancer she came up with, and so yeah, that was the kind of process. But it was back in March that happened.
And then once you heard this track, those kind of ideas kind of merged together, and you felt like it was a perfect fit, because the visual style and the musical style aren't necessarily, you know, something that you would think of going together, but they kind of merge really well in a really interesting way in this video.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you've looked in the comments, but
we try to stay away from the comments, honestly, of YouTube.
I love, because I'm like really into comments now since Adam Buxton's, like, you know, his hilarious take on comments when he like reads them out in like foreign voices. And he can like capture commenters' like personality. He'll like read it out, like, "But why is there no Paolo in the video?" Well, there was an amazing one that Sarah Pognassi, who produced the video, incredible, amazing lady producer, incredible, and she sent, she's hilarious. She sent me, she found like a gold mine on one of them, like. So you've seen all of these haters, just like, fair enough. Like they were like listening to him back in the day when he was a kind of like more pop singer. Now he's released this like dark soul record and got like fucking Daniel Wolfe to make this like truly anxious ridden epic video. And then, you know, then they hit like with this one, which has got like kind of quite, you know, like a giallo kind of horror. Thing. Like they're probably like, what the fuck is going on? But one of these commenters was just like, this is hilarious. I'll send you the thing. I wish I had it on me. But she just goes off on one with her take on what it all means, and she just starts coming up with names. Okay, so this is just a small section of the huge comment from this YouTube commenter who I love, by the way. Like, I love her take on it. Sent by the amazing Sarah Tognassi, who produced the video, and she found this and sent it to me. "Damn, Paolo, diamonds are a girl's best friend. From the corner of my eye to the back of my mind, I recognize what you mean to me. I'll be gone in a while. She is starting to age. She is all the faces. From the beginning, the first killing was her. They were all her pictures in different life, like in different life that she lived, sitting on her dresser." By the way, there's all this punctuation in it, like, to kind of make it like as if it's kind of like slam poetry. Dresser, he has followed her through time. Jack the Ripper, she is his twin sister. They were elite prince and princes in London."
That's a remarkable. That's not what I thought was happening, but maybe they're right. Who knows, right?
it was pretty insane. It goes on and on and about, like, then the twins and they have sex and then he kills her. And she ends up calling her Mary J. No, she calls her like Mary Jane Kelly Bungalow.
So it's a four name.
Yeah, she knew her. She knew where Mary Jane Kelly Bungalow was at. Oh no, Mary Jane Kelly lives in the bungalow. And then she abbreviates her own invention of the name by later calling her Mary J. Brilliant.
Right, like instead of just like using a short name going into this, you establish the long name and then the shortened version of it. That's great.
For contrast, here is a comment from MRA Digamus 100, and the entirety of the comment is, "But what the hell is with the old man drooling that golden liquid?" ? Because there are these little, you know, mainly the focus is on the stage and the performers in this, but there are these really interesting glimpses we get of people in the audience. There's the person this commenter is mentioning who's drooling gold liquid. My favorite is the guy in one of the tables who has like strings and he's trying to pull a girl away, and then the guy cuts the string. I love that sequence.
Yeah, there's the cat cradle man. That's William Fontaine was the actor. He was in a short film I did, but yeah, the gold liquid man. That guy Chris Pryor. He was in my first ever music video. He was actually my first ever kind of short film at uni, and then he was in my first ever music video. So a lot of those characters kind of also sometimes they come about from knowing the actors beforehand. Like Chris's one was certainly one of those, and we kind of wrote him as this slightly embarrassed vampire. So he's like kind of this like a vampiric kind of character who's been sucking away at someone's life force / wealth, and he's sort of just at the end of his night. So that's why I added that kind of a little man in the gold puddle afterwards was a kind of an afterthought to that, as if it's perhaps this, like, the guy who took the gold from is like kind of turned into this little miniature man.
And what about the casting of Joanna Lumley? How did that come about?
The casting generally was by this incredible casting director called Lauren Hedges, who again, Sarah Tignetti, the wonderful producer, brought into the project. And so Lauren cast everyone apart, but you know, incredible job of that. And then Joanna was actually, that was really Paolo. Because I'd written in the treatment, like, when you're in treatment, when you're writing the treatment, you're putting in, you know, all sorts. Like, oh, God, the video's over 30K. Let's get a helicopter or get the army in. So I'm like, right, oh, and of course, you know, I'm sure we can get a famous actress to play the older lady, maybe even a famous one to play the younger one. You know, you're just like throwing all your cards in. And then it got picked, and then they're like, cool, so who are you thinking of for the famous actress? I'm like, fuck. So I literally went on Google and put like older actresses. I was like looking at all these older actresses, and originally I was like, oh, fucking Jessica Lange would be sick. And then Paolo's a big fan of Helen Mirren, so he looked into that. And then in the end, he was like, it's got to be Joanna Lumley, it's got to be Joanna Lumley. So we tried, and I think she said no, but then Dan Kerwin, who was the commissioner, first time working with him, was absolute joy. And he knows, he's someone who knows someone who is like a kind of a famous person, agent's person. So it sort of then went through them, and she came on board in the end. I mean, you know, they paid her... They would have paid us slightly outside of the main budget, but not like £1 billion, whatever. But so she agreed, and she was like, really liked the track and his music and the script. So Yeah, I mean, that was just absolutely surreal, because I was brought up on Ab Fab by my wonderful mother. I don't know if you guys know Ab Fab.
They played it in the U.S. on Comedy Central when we were like seven, and so we're aware of its existence. But it was way too smart for us when we were seven. Sure. Probably now too. But we are aware of it. But yeah, when Adam mentioned before, yeah, she's not necessarily a household name out here in the U.S. But yeah, right. I think people know Ab Fab for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Another question I was wondering, you've got these really kind of stylistic murder scenes in the video, and I'm wondering what that style was based on.
So that style was, I started getting into the giallo films from Italy in the 60s, 70s kind of thing, like Dario Argento, Suspiria, Terror at the Opera, which is like my favorite horror film ever made. And then started just that style. I was just fell in love with it. And it's actually my friend Tom, it's a Hungarian friend of mine, showed me these films. And since then, I'd sort of watch more of these, and I just love the style, the color. It was just perfect, that the mix of like red, green, and blue. So it's a quite simple kind of palette, but in Suspiria, for example, it's stunning. And then like Amer really blew me away, which is a contemporary film, a recent film from I think 2012 or 2013, but it's a total kind of fanboy gushing film at the giallo genre, but done recently and done quite differently, but still very from that age. So it's always been something in my head. And I mean, even when I did DJ Shadow African Boy video, which I did back quite a while back now, that's got that kind of a bit of that influence of like the strong reds and greens in there. But then this video was really the chance to push that more. But I quite liked the idea of having the assassin was an afterthought. The assassin was kind of, as I was listening, you sort of start to imagine a reveal of this kind of killer behind her. But the killer in the giallo films, he's always kind of a lone force. He's always this mysterious killer who's like ruthlessly cold going out there. But I like the idea of him actually working for, like, Joanna's actually got him as a kind of servant. So he's like this, and we never actually reveal who he is, whereas always in the giallo films, the whole thing is always they reveal who it is. Like, oh, it was the maths teacher. Oh, it was actually her, like, the whole time kind of thing. And I really like the idea of having him serve a servile, like, serving her and never actually showing his face. He just disappears after he drops the necklace. You never see him again. So he stays. I like the idea of this character staying cold, staying personalityless, like just like a shark, just runs on kind of instinct. And so, yeah, that was the kind of thinking. So that, and same, the murder scene was the chance to kind of play with that whole kind of beautiful murders like Argento does so well.
And, you know, along the lines of style of music videos, I think I don't know of any other two music videos that are so divergent in style within the same amount of time by one director as Make It Last by Pearls Negras and One Day by Paolo Nutini. I recommend it to you to watch both of these videos.
One after the other.
Back to back. It is kind of a bit of a mindfuck to watch those back to back. You know, if you watch your whole catalog, I think there's so much variation in the style and tone. And I was wondering how you kind of do that as a director, flipping between these different styles. Because I think directors sometimes tend to get into a style because that's how they operate on set, or that's how they their kind of workflow operates. So I imagine each production must be kind of wildly different if you're working in such different styles.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think the main thing is probably, I mean, the main thing is definitely the music. I rarely go back to old ideas that I've written down, although I've been doing that a lot more kind of in the recent year or two. Oh, I've got like a, you know, little, you know, notepad of ideas which haven't been used, or I have without listening to music. But I tend to try and really have it come from directly from the music, directly from just in from a very purist sense. So I think that, and also I never build sets. I hate sets, and did it once. I'm very lucky to have Anna Lomax, who's amazing, but it was for a commercial, so we, you know, had money and stuff, not tons actually, but still. So I like using real locations, real people, people I might have bumped into, things I've heard and things I've seen. So they're kind of postcards from my own kind of journey in life. So I think they naturally change, especially with having, like, moving, for example. But I guess I'm still kind of not sure which I prefer, but I like varying kind of the style, but still trying to keep, or if it does come through that there's still like a singular voice coming through different styles is interesting for me. Some more than others though, but yeah, and I think also budget, you know.
Right.
I think the budget really, really changes what you might do as well. But it's interesting you mentioned Quez Rollerblades, because that's probably like out like my own. If you have a favorite of your own work, sounds a bit silly, but I feel like it's a video which I hold very dear, because that's probably the purest, like the most pure video I've done, which like related to music. Like it was written, I feel like that was written on the first listen. By the time the track finished, the video existed in my head.
And if anybody
sometimes
isn't,
it takes so long. It's kind of, yeah.
Well, if anybody hasn't seen this video, we'll put it in the show notes, because it is, it's one of my favorite videos of 2014, and if anybody is a listener of the podcast, they will definitely remember us talking about this video featuring jam skating, I believe.
We've also got an interview on the blog with Ian about this video, so maybe you read that. We'll link that as well if you want. If you haven't learned enough about the video here, there's more info there.
Cool. An interesting tidbit. The skater Juan Tosino is Joanna Lumley's assassin.
Holy cow! Holy cow! Really?
Yeah, that's the same. I was like, oh, the assassin. I can cast my grandma. Like, I'm not gonna see his face.
And I'm gonna in my head now, those videos are directly connected, and he skates away every time in my brain.
There you go.
That's how I'm gonna watch him. That's fantastic.
And he has his Sunday is that weird black limbo.
right. The skating is always, oh my god.
That's just the weekday job, yeah.
God, that's the best. That's the best news.
Well, speaking of news and different genre shifts, we have some kind of crazy shit to talk about. And
well, first we should mention where you can find stuff about
Yeah,
Ian,
yeah,
right?
There.
Okay. Sorry.
So if you go to all the videos we talk about on the podcast today, of course, we've done the work for you. We've collected them together in a collection. If you go to imvdb.com/podcast. You will see all these videos, and the first one will be One Day by Paolo Nutini, as well as a link to Ian's page on IMVDB, which you can see Rollerblades by Quest, Make It Last by Pearls Negras, excuse me, and many others. And we should talk a little bit about, this is the part in the podcast where we should talk about a little bit of music video news. And this week we're bringing you some pretty bizarre stuff.
There's some bizarre stuff in the world of music video news. It's got a question mark at the end because we don't know if this is an actual music video or not.
I tend to put this on the spectrum of not music video. Well, we're going to talk about it anyway because it's bizarre.
It was presented initially as music video news.
Right. So I don't know if anybody's been following this, but earlier today, this is Thursday, November 20th, a video surfaced of Lana Del Rey, that was ostensibly shot by Eli Roth, the director of Hostel and a few other movies, as well as acting in Inglourious Basterds, and it was kind of like a very weird stylized video of Lana Del Rey sort of being raped by Eli Roth.
It takes sort of out. There's more going on than that in the video itself.
It looks like a bad student horror film. It's terrible. Let's just get cut to the chase
But with excellent casting. Have you seen, there's this woman with the weirdest massive tits on
her. Oh, I know. It was insane. I was not so turned off by that stuff. Like, that stuff seemed like, because this video was initially presented as a Marilyn Manson music video that Eli Roth like made and then hated, or something made and was like, oh wait, this is terrible, I'm raping Lana Del Rey, and decided to not put it out or like lock it away for a year, and then here we are a year later and it suddenly surfaces. It was a really bizarre like presentation of this story, and the claim is that this was a Marilyn Manson music video, and like the lady with the huge tits, like, and like weird stuff at a dinner table
it's really weird. The whole that one frame is like really bizarre.
I buy that frame in a Marilyn Manson music
video. Yeah,
if someone said that.
There's like a little to the right that looks like the kind of a huge penis with a frilly hat on behind the fruit bowl.
It sounds fantastic. I mean, it is fantastic in theory, but when it's coupled with obviously the stuff that's not so fantastic, it's really strange, and it adds to the strangeness. And then since then, there's been some distancing, surprise from Marilyn Manson, saying that they didn't have anything to do with this. And initially, you're like, wait, you're in it. And Adam Alexander has found some clips, right? That these clips are from other music videos.
Yeah. So as it turns out, everything in this, besides the rape scene, are actually scenes from two Marilyn Manson videos: No Reflection and Slow Motion. So the dinner table stuff.
That's all actually the tits lady. That's all Manson's actual music videos.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Exactly. So that's all old. It's not. That's
it. Is.
It already existed before.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that either. I thought
I'm not up on the Manson videos.
But yeah. Here's what makes this so strange is that a year and a half ago, or close to 2 years ago, Eli Roth was on Larry King's show, of all things. Larry King still has some, I don't know where he puts it out. Maybe he just puts it on his own, or he mails it to his friend or whatever. He has a show. And Eli Roth was on it, and he was like, yeah, I shot some stuff. And he specifically says, with Marilyn Manson and Lana Del Rey, and it's sick. He's like, he says, this is sick footage. And I think it made a little bit of news at the time, and then people just sort of like brushed it under the, you know, forgot about it, obviously, until this. And then they made this connection. What did Eli Roth shoot with Lana Del Rey? B, who put this video together that was a mashup and put it out there? And C, why hasn't Eli Roth said anything? This is kind of a weird mystery.
Right, Marilyn Manson was all over this shit. Like, as soon as he's like, wait a second, wait a second. But like, Eli Roth is just like hanging out doing Eli Roth stuff, which I can't, I don't really know what that is, but it's not addressing this. And that is a little strange to me. And
just hypothesize that part of it, I mean, obviously the scene with Eli Roth and Lana Del Rey is from said music video that he filmed. And some geek heard the interview, somehow got a hold of that footage. Maybe Eli Roth put this together.
Yeah. Maybe Eli Roth's the geek. We don't agree necessarily. IMDb, Fringe Music Fix thinks this guy's a geek. IMDb might not. No. I think he might be just like a regular guy, whoever put this mashup together. We can't dispute that this is Lana Del Rey and Eli Roth in that scene, right? So that's confirmed.
The question is, what song was this a music video for?
What is going on is the question.
She's got like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre t-shirt on as well.
So my question
is this could even be like an ident for like a horror film week. Like, next week.
Right. So my question is this. Is it okay? Like there are rape scenes in movies and stuff that you can justify. I think it's harder to justify, like, Eli Roth raping Lana Del Rey in a Marilyn Manson music video. I think that context, especially wrapped in the way this is presented with just like blood dinners and Lana Del Rey rape, this is tasteless in that context. But like, you know, you can put that type of scene in some kind of Eli Roth horror movie and like at least have a little bit more of a leg to stand on. And so like the fact that this is presented as a music video, I think, is maybe part of why it's gotten the attention that it got. I mean, I saw it in Pitchfork. If there was just like a horror movie that Eli Roth made that features a scene of Lana Del Rey getting raped, I don't know if it necessarily causes the same stir. Maybe a stir, but not this one.
Well, that was a truly bizarre story that I did not see. That's one of those things that I usually stay away from. Like, I don't even know every time I see Alex from Target, I'm like, nope, I don't even want to know. I'm out of there.
This is the one, because the word music video was attached to it, we're like, oh fuck, we have to read this.
Yeah.
And then this is what we found. And now whoever listened to this podcast also had to know about it if he didn't already. Congrats.
Congratulations.
The one great thing about this story is it made me revisit Larry King's Twitter account and all his ridiculous tweets, which we don't have time to talk about because we should now talk about some of the other music videos released this week, other than this Marilyn Manson one.
And to start us off, I think we should talk a little bit about our good pal, our friend, everybody's favorite pop lady, Meghan Trainor. Trainor. I guess I don't know why I said Trainor. I'm sure it's Trainor. She actually currently still has. I was a little bit shocked by this. It's still the number two song in the country, All About That Bass.
It is all about that bass if you think about it.
I guess so. Yeah, I've talked to numerous people who what that song is actually about has totally gone over their head, which I did not expect. Adults here.
Right. People just think it's about loud music.
Yeah, or even about like fish or whatever. So she has a new song out called Lips Are Movin'. The previous video was directed by Fatima Robinson. I was a huge fan of the All About That Bass video. I thought it was great. And this one is directed by Philip Andelman. And this is a very bizarre cash grab, it feels like, from top to bottom.
This is like,
you know how you always hear about artists who have a very successful single and, you know, 10 years later when they're successful and they're talking about their second release, they're always like, you know, I didn't just copy what I did the first time because then people would expect that from me and then I would be a one-trick pony. Meghan Trainor has moved as hard into the category of I'm just going to do the same goddamn thing as, you know, as very closely as possible and see if it works. And this is that song.
It's as hard as she possibly could. She says the word bass in this song a bunch of times even. Like, there's so many connections, and I feel like they're trying to recreate a lot of what was done in the first video with less, which is going to be more difficult to do than to, like, try to make something the first time. And, you know, for something that seems like it was an intentional move from the ground up, starting from the song, for Philip Andelman to try to, like, work within that circumstance seems complicated to me. And I would not mark this up as my favorite video of the week, that for sure.
It's a song that was obviously written right after All About That Bass was famous, because she's in it. She's like, yeah, I sang that song. Remember that song, All About That Bass? It's still popular. Like, it's not. It wasn't a hit like a year ago. It's like a number two song in the country.
Hit right now. This video, this song should be called I Made All About That Bass. And they should see if it hits. Ian, did you like this video?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't really like it, but I felt I had, like, but then again, I don't know what the budget was. If it was like a really big budget, then if they didn't have much money, they did really well.
if this was a shoestring budget, like $5K, if this was a $5K budget,
I tip my hat off to them. I think what I didn't like was them celebrating at the end, you know, like cuts to them like, yeah, we did it.
Yeah, because, like, what did you do?
I was like, what?
I'm wondering if, Ian, did you bring that up just to prove that you actually watched this whole video?
That's the only bit I watched. I could get that in there.
All right, that was your proof.
I watched it all the way through. My lovely housemate, who was stoned out of his face, walked in and sort of bumbled over and looked over my shoulder, and I had to mumble that I had to watch it because I had to talk about it. I didn't turn it off, but I carried on watching it.
Wow, that was brave of you.
He left the room, like, scratching his head.
That's dedication.
We could not appreciate you doing that more, honestly. It is funny that you think about it. It's like, hey, come be on our podcast. Also, watch, like, probably a bunch of bad music videos.
It was really good, though, because I haven't seen the bass one until you were mentioning it. I've just had a little skim through. But I loved his Dominique Q Unique video for Andelman's.
Philip Andelman has, you know, plenty of really fantastic music videos.
I think this one, like, I think I was just sort of thinking of it from a kind of a, you know, this is like, you make this and then you got, like, good budget. It, like, you can have, like, get all your art directors paid well. Make, like, it's, like, really tight, technically very tight video. And it's probably also something that you can probably... Like, I don't know, if I was a production company, you look at that and you think, oh, you can get, like, an IKEA ad off the back of this, or, well, maybe not IKEA, but this is a very, like, oh, that script you've got here, this guy has just made this, which is, like, the whole kind of palette and idea of this commercial script. It feels like that's, like, a really strong stepping stone, commercial script stepping stone music video kind of thing.
Is Meghan Trainor popular in the UK?
I've never heard of her, but I'm not a good
not a good you're not a good judge. You're right. You also mentioned you didn't know the artist who you did the music video for.
Actually, this is a question I've wondered for. Did you know who Naughty Boy was before you did the La 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 video?
No, all right. So now we've done this. Just go down your whole list of music videos and give us a quick yes or no.
Well, so I didn't know. I listen to all sorts of music, but I've really not on the pulse, or I never go to gigs or anything, so I'm really like pretty out of the scene, I guess. But I knew DJ Shadow. That was like, oh yeah, that was good. And then like the early ones, I knew them all. And then Quez, I did. I'm trying to think, the first time I worked with Quez, I didn't know Quez, but no one really knew who he was. So that was okay.
Yeah.
So there's a mix, but I definitely discovered music through making the music.
that's one way to do it. I mean, and I'm
really dedicated way to like
very labor intensive.
Like, I won't listen to your music if we work together. So. Yes, you do.
Let's talk about. I think we should move on to She and Him. Stay a while,
okay?
Because She and Him is an artist made up of M Ward and Zoe Deschanel. I'm really having a hard time with this tonight.
Yeah,
guys.
You're great.
Deschanel.
You mispronounced the website.
Zoe Deschanel. She's an actress, and he's a singer. And they have a band, She and Him. They're releasing a new album called Classics, which is, I think, 13 cover songs.
Said she's an actress and he's a singer. I don't think that's how the band works, isn't it?
Well, she's a singer and in this band. Anyway, I'm cutting all that out. Yep. So they have a new album coming out called Classics. It's cover songs. Their previous three albums or four albums, I think, have all been original Zoe Deschanel songs. So this one is... I don't want to say a trope, but something we've seen done in music videos before in varying degrees. And this is Zoe Deschanel dancing with an invisible person in this house. In a house.
Persons, maybe? I don't know.
I feel like it's one person. But before we talk about this video, I just want to say one thing. It was directed by Canada, first of all. But I just want to say M. Ward is the worst guitar pantomimer I've ever seen in my life. Because he's in here a few seconds here and there, and he is just so unbelievably fucking bad at doing the pantomime.
At the end of the day, it's almost a joke. It might be an intentional thing.
No, I don't think it's intentional.
It's interesting that you say keep dumping on stuff, and then you bring up this video, because I wouldn't call this video one that I would want to dump on.
No, this is great. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's like doing something with an invisible person is definitely something that's been seen in music videos before. But I think that they really like kind of crank it up in this one for me. There's some of it that's like kind of like really impressive. Like I can't even really wrap my head around how they technically achieved it. Like there's one point where she's like you mentioned, dancing with an invisible person, and as someone who has, you know, very little film experience or background, you know, I would assume that you would achieve that through having a person dressed in all green. And then removing them from frame. But like they're doing things like closing the blinds quickly behind Zoe, and you know, the lighting changes rapidly and stuff. And I just like, I can't even comprehend how that even happened. Ian, as someone with far more experience, do you have any idea how they might have done something like that?
Yes, I'll tell you how they did it. I don't know either. I think there's a mix of them. I'm assuming that there's a mix of them actually that will actually have used people in the green screen costumes. Like there's a lot of her as if she's like holding on to someone, but you can kind of tell she's not, of course. So like she'll do that bit and then do a spin, and then they'll will have had, I think, a green screen costume person then kind of just hold her weight and push her back up. There's other moments which are impressive, is when she really holds them and you can really see that. So for that bit, I'm assuming that there would have been a fair bit of painting in it, I'm assuming. But they've done motion control. So they'll have done the MoCo thing, motion control camera, so that would have gone run through various times. But I think there's a mix of there would have been a person in a green screen costume, which is just supporting weight and stuff, and then actual mechanical rigs. I think when she's spinning around, that she's probably latching herself onto. But yeah, I found it really impressive on that front. And it's, but I felt it was like Canada at like 60%. Like, I felt it could have, that it was missing, like that. It was like, it's got that kind of feel of Canada, but it was like PG Canada.
Yeah.
So like it could, they could have actually put a bit of, I don't know, like looked into one of the rooms and sort of fractaled the narrative a bit somewhere. So it was very straight, I felt, for them. But I was, I really liked the whole, all the movement and choreography was, and I was impressed. I didn't know she was the actual singer. Is she the actual singer?
Yeah.
She is, and she, and for the past few albums, so she's written a lot of the songs. I think she directed the last video.
She got dance background.
Is she the last? Yeah. The last video is very dance heavy as well. Oh, okay. So I think so. But you're right about the combination of how they probably use that, the man in the green suit, by having them at sometimes being the actual dance partner and then other times kind of supporting the weight and allowing her to like mime the dance partner. It kind of really like adds some additional like layers of magic to it and makes it a lot more kind of like surprising, which is why it feels like there are multiple people, maybe. But yeah, and it's like adds to the whimsy of it, I think. But that's really interesting, the Canada PG analogy. I think that's a pretty strong one because, yeah, it's got some of that. I mean, obviously Canada has made, you know, some of the, you know, some of our favorite music videos, you know, from the since 2010 basically. And so you know, this obviously doesn't kind of hit those higher levels than the edgier stuff,
which like, could like them also to hold on a technique, you know. It was, there's low, you know, there's a whole kind of almost like a genre of music videos which are technique focused, technique driven, and they literally are kind of almost there like a notepad of exploring a technique. But they don't tend to do that. If they do something which is like a technique, but then it's kind of enveloped within narrative or goes out of narrative. So I was surprised watching this, and the whole video is, look at this trick, look at this trick, look at this trick, look at this trick, which is not what they normally do.
I have to believe that Zooey Deschanel had a bit of a hand in this, or had at least an influence, like I mentioned in the last video. And it's weird, she and him are almost one-to-one, releasing one music video a year, weirdly enough. And their last video for I Could Have Been Your Girl from 2013 was directed by Zooey Deschanel. So she definitely has her hands in a lot of different shit, so why not hire Canada, then maybe monkey around with what they're doing a little bit? You never know.
I just envisioned Zooey Deschanel holding a bunch of shit, and that's gross. This does fall right in line with she and him's music videos, though. This is she and him, A+. They fall in line, so that makes a lot of sense. Zooey being heavily involved. Let's talk about something different.
I would like, so Bruno Mars is back with with a new song. He's actually featured on a song, although I feel like it's the other way around. It feels like Bruno Mars featuring Mark Ronson, but I believe it's tagged as Mark Ronson, and the song is called Uptown Funk, and it is directed by Cameron Duddy, who has been on this podcast before. If you listen back to his podcast interview, he told a story that we've not let go of at all. We've not let go of that story.
We also then made a cartoon out of it.
Yeah, so if you want to look at the link, we'll put a link in the show notes of the cartoon that we made about how he started working with Bruno Mars, which is interesting. And this is their first collaboration in a while. And it is definitely feels like a Bruno Mars, Cameron Duddy collaboration with Mark Ronson there. There's a lot of dancing, a lot of moves. This is kind of Bruno Mars and his hip-hop rockin' street gang hanging out on the street. That's the best way I could. It's, I love this video, but that's how I would describe it.
Hip hop rock and street gang. Nobody's ever said those words together before, but that's
they're getting their shoes shined. They're not just getting their shoes shined for no reason. They have really shiny ass shoes.
They got stuff going on. And despite the hip hop rock and blues gang, what did you call it? This video feels remarkably authentic to me, all right? Don't you think? Like, this is what I envision Bruno Mars doing every single day. After he wakes up, late, he goes out and does this, right? Shining his shoes.
It's interesting because there's a lot of really interesting camera work in this. There's a lot of, tilted camera, not tilted, but watch it. I can't describe it. But there's also you can tell this is shot on a set, first of all. I think that the timing of it is not contemporary. Like, if you look at the actual screenshot of the video, they're all in various different period garb.
Is this period garb?
I think it is a little.
This is not a joke anymore. This literally is what Bruno Mars wears all the time.
No, but
not that pink jacket, but like that hat.
But look in the background of the still that Vivo is using and YouTube is using. There is a man dressed like a 1920s like carnival barker in the background.
Okay, the guy in the background, maybe not.
There's a guy in blue dressed like MC Hammer from the 80s. I think it's
he's dressed like that guy because that's that guy's suit. I'm telling you. No, I'm not telling you because I don't have any idea. But I'm arguing that these clothes are closer to what these guys actually wear than.
I think it feels like. Like they filmed it in, don't you know about this little area in New York where everyone is like really into looking like from that period of time kind of thing. So it's not like it's overtly period, but it's definitely consciously not now.
Right.
I mean, the whole style's like.
The man in the back is probably in a costume. The carnival parlor guy. But the hip hop street gang—that's their uniform. That's the gang uniform. I
think we've all been a part of a hip hop street gang at some point. I mean,
by default, by being on this podcast, you're in this one. So there you go.
Have you? I'm just going to continue my line of questioning. Are hip hop street gangs popular in the UK?
Hip hop street gangs are. I think they maybe used to be a little more popular than now. But they're not really.
It's just different.
The UK hip hop scene's kind of just dead now.
That's kind of sad to hear.
That's really sad.
We have grime and it's all sort of morphed and changed to other things. But the kind of hip hop, I find it a bit strange if you see someone in kind of hip hop attire. Like overtly hip hop attire is something you don't really tend to see very much, I think.
Like Ali G style hip hop attire?
Yeah, I think that was like back in his day that maybe he put the nail in the coffin.
Put too much of a magnifying glass on what was going on. that probably makes a lot of sense.
Go ahead, Doug.
Well, I was gonna push to another video, and let's run through a tunnel to another video.
Good one. Keep going. We're behind you. We're supporting you.
Okay, so first let's eat dinner with our family, and then grow a black spot on ourselves. Let's talk about the new Megaforce music video, Can't Help Myself, by Brodinski featuring SD. Let's talk about it, because I like it, and I think it's pretty great.
Do you understand it?
I understood.
Wait, hold on a second.
Hey, Adam just chimes in and says, this is a very tough to understand music video.
I think this is a. I think this is okay. Give it to us, Adam.
Adam, hold on. Give it. Explain the video and tell us what it means.
Sure. Explain yourself, Adam.
Yeah. No.
And I mean, I'm only going to take a guess, but so basically, the video focuses on one male character who starts off at the beginning of the video as an older gentleman, and I think it is confusing, but it's kind of
he bails on. I get this.
No, no, but I mean, I get it, but I don't. It's hard to get, but anyway, it's basically his life sort of in reverse, and while I thought it was maybe going to go in a different direction as I was watching it, I thought it was going to kind of show the mistakes that he's made in his life, but it didn't really do that per se as much as just show him at different stages in his life in reverse. So there's three or four main stages, and he gets younger as the video progresses. And each time that he time travels, he kind of gets swallowed in this big black bubble of goop. So, yeah, I don't know. I guess it's about the transition of life, and it's shown in reverse, and maybe it's about making bad choices. The song is called Can't Help Myself. Which would kind of fit in with that.
That to be what happened. What it's about, and it could be. I don't think it is. I don't think it needs like to be summed up in this way necessarily.
Because I actually didn't think when my first watch, I thought it wasn't meant to be the same guy getting younger, because I felt like he didn't really look anything like the older guy when he goes from old to a bit like 30s.
Mm.
It was only after noticing the tattoo that I was, oh, it is meant to be the same guy.
The first time
I watched it, I didn't quite catch. And I also, I enjoyed thinking of it like that, because I felt like when he's with the family and he's getting enveloped by the black tar, I felt when I watched it in my mind, I was imagining the wife, what she's thinking, like, oh, here we go again, like fucking black bubble coming out, and so in my mind, they all know that he does this, and they all kind of just like, don't look at him while he's doing it, like having your mad uncle who just has a twitch of like trying to hump the armchair, and you sort of just turn away and ignore it.
And this twitch.
I kind of watched, like, thought that, and I was like, really liked this idea of like that he does this and he just can't help it, and he changes and he's like fucking goes running again. And
yeah, because and so every
watch, I realized
that might not be it. And yeah, one element that we haven't talked much about is after everybody who bursts there, it's definitely a group of men. It might be the same man or not. The men definitely get younger throughout the video. After you see them burst, the video starts also in this like tunnel like a street tunnel, and they all go into this same door, and it kind of starts their story. But each time they're all also covered in like the residue of it. And I was wondering if you guys think that tunnel stuff is a reference stylistically to the Radiohead "Rabbit in Your Headlights" video. Do you guys know that video?
Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of. Yeah. Watched it,
mm-hmm.
Sure. But one of the things that really came to mind, I love the whole atmosphere of it, and the first tunnel shot just instantly made me think of the Gesaffelstein video. What's it called?
The Pursuit.
Pursuit. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's got that. It's got a similar kind of feel, especially that last shot of the kid. Like really clean shot of a really like model cast kid covered in this black, but then like a clinically perfect tunnel, and the music as well has that kind of vibe, like a cold electronic kind of thing. But yeah,
there's something about a shot of a kid who looks like really uncomfortable in a place that I would be afraid of, and it makes me afraid, and I felt that a little bit. But yeah, I really, what I liked about this video, is just kind of the atmosphere it creates and kind of just the whole style. And it just is an impressive thing to watch. Sometimes I don't get music videos that I like a lot, and I think this is a very good example of that.
To the stylistic similarities that Ian mentioned, probably make sense. Brodinski and Gus Affelstein are label mates, so it's probably an aesthetic that they kind of shoot. There's only four artists on that label, so that makes sense.
Their single artwork is a bubble with just realized on this.
As did I. I see that now. You can see
it with smoke rings underneath, and he's smoking. Maybe it's like a big cancer bubble.
Or maybe this is like a very weird take on Benjamin Button. Maybe we're gonna see a new Benjamin Button movie where Brad Pitt is swallowed by a giant bubble.
It's possible. It's interesting though that there is a tie to that. To the single cover with the bubble imagery.
I wonder if it's because you get your briefs through in the track, and you get I wonder if that's kind of spurned that sort of VFX take. The VFX idea maybe came.
You don't have to let it, you know, I obviously was like trying to figure out what was going on too. I wasn't just like watching it without my brain. I don't know what's going on.
So the last one we should talk about today is The Party Line by Belle and Sebastian, who I didn't know they were releasing new music. But there we go. They had a video for the remix of Your Cover's Blown. By the Meow Meow mix that was great from last year that I really loved. But this is by LeBlanc and Cudmore, who have also, we should always mention when this happens, have been on this podcast a while ago, right, Doug? Like 2 years ago or something?
They were.
Who's that?
I thought you were playing the old podcast of the Bunk and Kidmore.
Was that you, Adam?
Yeah.
Adam, get your shit together, Adam. How did that even happen? They were on, it was a while ago, but they are frequent commentary contributors, so you can catch up on the comings and goings of LeBlanc and Cudmore on our commentaries page, because there's a bunch of them in there.
And this video is a narrative, really beautifully shot. This is another one that is kind of also like the Bruno Mars and Mark Ronson video, I think, of a deliberately sort of murky time period. I'm not really sure when this takes place, but I think it's kind of like a simple love story of these two young teenagers who meet at a party, and it involves dance. It's one of those things that I don't think is describable, although it has a loose narrative to it. But I love this. I thought this was a really fantastic, really, you know, kind of cinematic, kind of like movie-like short film music video, which I don't think is always successful. I think it's harder than it sounds to pull off.
Is there a way to describe kind of the progression to like the three parts? I don't even know how you describe it, but I think it's important.
I can't remember where I read it. I think it was in the posting for this video elsewhere that Scott had posted.
The premiere location or something.
And it's kind of to do with how, I don't know, the fantasy of film, and they're kind of playing with that. And it starts off, like, if you look at the beginning, the camera's all, like, handheld and quite dirty, old school, like, really old school, like, black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And then it starts to get more solid. The camera work calms down a bit, and it's kind of, you kind of push through almost different genres and different styles.
Yeah, because it does that 1-2, and then the third one is like super stylized.
Yeah, and all the choreography is extremely choreographed.
Yeah,
old. And at the beginning, they're just these kids are like just dancing around, and it kind of like peaks in this beautifully controlled environment and meticulously kind of planned shooting, and then it kind of drifts away again.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like she's organizing the party in her head in a way or something. But I love this video. Like all of their videos, I'm a big fan. And each time new one comes out, they just keep pushing it. And I love it. It's like so full of soul as well, which is something I always love to see in a music video. It's really full of heart, and you can feel that when you watch it.
And LeBlanc and Cudmore, you're right. They're on like a crazy roll right now too. And they're a duo who I would also say, like we were talking about before, of like they're able to do a lot of different styles and tones.
Totally.
They still have that, you know, that singular voice, or in this case, two voices. That was dumb. But you know, this singular voice that comes through in the end. So that's cool. But yeah, if you kind of like scrub through it kind of quickly, you can kind of see what you're talking about, Ian, how like it starts out kind of black and white and shaky, and then it kind of like you can see the progression of it kind of like becoming more solid filmmaking and more stylized. It's like a super interesting approach to a music video.
Yeah, because the genre changes as well heavily when like that tiny subtle little moment of them matching the lyrics when he's like shoot a gun and you see the gun and then thing with a knife and the knife is like a brief Canada moment kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, this is one that I would really love to see in a movie theater. There's a few videos that I'd love seeing music videos in movie theaters, you know, with the big screen and the sound and the different environment. We experience music videos largely on, you know, computer screens, which is fine, but, you know, some of them feel like they would be, that's their venue, kind of. So if you ever get a chance to go see music videos in movie theater, I highly recommend it. I got a chance a few times, but each time it's really fun.
Such a different experience.
It really is. Yeah, I've seen videos that I've seen, you know, two or three times on a computer that I've seen in a theater that it's like seeing them for the first time. Very, very different.
So everyone should do it. That's your project for this week.
Yeah, please go to your local theater and say, are you showing some music videos here? And then be like, no, we have Interstellar. That's it.
That's all you get, Interstellar.
We will show this Meghan Trainor video for you if you want.
It's like, no, pass.
Are you sure she's the one who sang that bass song?
Think about the bass.
Just imagine if like who's somebody who had a really crazy first. Oh, what if Katy Perry's second single was like, "I Kissed the Girl Again," you know, and it's all like,
"Remember me? I'm still kissing that girl."
And Meghan Trainor, she has an EP. All But That Bass is off of an EP. And there are other songs that are great from that EP. I thought Title should have been the second single, but anyway, I don't want to go back into that hole again because
we dug ourselves.
We already went in there. But like I mentioned before, you go to imvdb.com/podcast. You can see not just this episode, which is episode 133, but you can see, as the number might indicate, 132 other episodes of this podcast featuring many of the directors that we have talked about on this podcast, including the aforementioned LeBlanc and Cudmore, Cameron Duddy, no Meghan Trainor. Meghan Trainor's said no to us a lot of times, but if we ever get her on, we'll let you know. And maybe Megaforce. That'd be a nice one to have one day.
There's always hope.
There's always the next 130. What were you going to say, Doug?
I was going to say that Philip Engelman, if he doesn't listen to what we think about Trainor video, maybe will one day join us too.
And Ian, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you. It was very nice for the invite. I had a great time.
And we will see you next week.
It's always a thing that confuses me. Really. If we're actually saying goodbye to them.
Oh, yes. Goodbye.
You're going to see me next week?